Committee to order.
And what day is it?
February 29th. Couldn't remember the date for a minute. We have two bills on the agenda today. We have we will start with Senator Miller and Senate File 1869. Senator Miller, whenever you're ready, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, everybody. Today we are here to talk about Senate File 1869, which is the Greater Minnesota Internship Program. This legislation, or the idea, started about a month ago when I had a meeting with some students from Winona State University, and one of the concerns that they had was that there was not enough internship opportunities for them in Greater Minnesota. So I came back to the Capitol, and a few days, I think two or three days later, maybe a week later, J.D. was in my office with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. We were talking about another bill, and they mentioned this this program that they were working on, and it kind of just fell into place for me because I had that meeting with the college students, and it seemed like a very good fit. So some of the challenges that the college students mentioned to me, not only the lack of internship opportunities in Greater Minnesota, but it seems like there are a lot of internship opportunities in the metro area or out of state, but that presents some challenges for the college students. Number one, most of them have 12-month leases for their housing, and they don't want to pay housing in two different areas. The travel expenses, and then many of them also have part-time jobs locally, so if they were to take an internship somewhere outside of where they're going to college, it would present another problem for them. So just real brief, the legislation will offer an incentive for Minnesota businesses outside the metro area to provide paid internships to college students. The conversations that I've had with local businesses is that they're eager to connect with college students, but sometimes managing an intern does have some costs, especially for the smaller businesses. So this program is certainly by no means a silver bullet. It's not going to solve all the issues, but it will address a real issue that we have in Greater Minnesota and help provide an incentive for our businesses to provide internship opportunities for college students. I'll have JD give a little overview of the legislation. Before we do that, we do have a delete all amendment that I'd like to move. And the reason for this amendment, when the legislation was originally drafted, it had public colleges and universities, but the private colleges and universities were not included, and that was an oversight. We want to certainly make sure that our private students attending private colleges and universities have the same opportunities as all the other students. There is an issue with the for-profit colleges and universities when it comes to unemployment issues. We certainly don't want an unintended consequence for these businesses to hire an intern and then perhaps open a door for those interns to collect unemployment. Likely would not happen, but we don't want to go down that path. So if we can find a solution, we will include the for-profit colleges and universities, but at this point they will not be included because of that reason. And also, as you see in your packet, there is a fiscal note to this program. So we as a legislature will have to decide if this is going to be part of our overall jobs or package at the end of session if we do some spending. So that conversation will probably be best to be had in the Tax Committee, where the bill will be headed next.
Well, and Senator Miller, first of all, I wanted to do quorum is present so that we can adopt your and I would accept that as an author's amendment, the A2, given that this is the first first committee hearing that it's been heard at. So why don't we adopt the A2 amendment, and then we will have an explanation, because there is I'd like to explain the fiscal note a little bit, because there is a little bit of a change. But I think first, just procedurally, let's so Senator Miller has offered the A2 delete all amendment as an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Ms. Weidman, if you could explain the fiscal note issue that was brought to our attention. And I believe the fiscal note is in everybody's packet.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, after the fiscal note was prepared, it was brought to our attention that if you look at page 6 of the fiscal note, which are the assumptions and cost estimates done by the University of Minnesota, when they initially did this fiscal note, they assumed that there would be significantly more students participating in this program. But in a sense, the fact that you've got the $1.25 million cap in terms of the tuition credits that can be given out, there are only potentially 1,000 students that could participate in this program. And so if you look at the universities in terms of enrollment, their proportion of students of that 1,000 students, they would be estimating they would be have about 400 students that potentially could be eligible to participate in this internship program out of the 1,000. And as a result, the cost estimate that they put in would be reduced from what you see in the fiscal note of approximately $319,000 down to about $60,000. And that's just a function of going from the original estimate of students that would be participating down to the 400.
Is there a line on the front, on the first page, that you could point to that would be the change?
Madam Chair, if you look, under the University of Minnesota on that first page, under net expenditures, you'll see it says $319,000 in fiscal 13 and then going forward. And that would be
so that would be brought down to 60.
60, correct.
And then what would the new total down at the total cost savings to the state on that last line?
I haven't done the calculation.
Okay,
yet,
all right.
It would just be
$1,470.
Yeah, it'd be just $110,000 reduction from that bottom line.
$110,000? It's only 60 from 319 instead of 259. I thought it'd be $259,000 less.
Yeah. Perhaps I can work on that and get back to you on that.
This is 259. I'm getting 1 point. It'd be 1473.
That's what I got.
Right. Okay. All right. Then we've crossed and double cross checked. So I just thought it might be easier for members if we could just tell them to cross that out on that, in particular on the FY13. It'd be 1473. You can scratch out the 1732 if you're so inclined.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
All right. And it is my understanding that a new fiscal note has been, that would reflect that has been requested, but it'll
Madam
be
Chair, it that's correct. Actually, the numbers have already been entered into the system, and we're just waiting for MMB to sign off on that. But okay. The EBO from MMB and I did have a discussion about this in terms of how this would be handled.
Okay. Thank you very much. So, Senator Miller, we do have the bill as amended with the A2 amendment in front of us. And I think we handled all the housekeeping, so.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll have J.D. Burton from the Coalition go through the bill as amended.
Mr. Burton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As Senator Miller stated, my name is J.D. Burton. I'm with the law firm of Flaherty & Hood. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, which represents over 75 cities across Greater Minnesota. I want to thank Senator Miller for authoring this legislation, as well as Chair Fischbach, Senator Peterson, Senator Sharon, and Senator Saxhog for joining him as a co-author of this legislation. You may be asking yourself, why is the CGMC involved in this issue? What is their interest, and why would they like to see something like this move forward? Well, there's really two reasons. One is that our members recognize that a healthy business community means a healthy city. Our economic development well-being depends on a successful public and private sector. That's why we solicited, over a five-month period, information from Greater Minnesota local chambers of commerce, economic development authorities, foundations, and others to learn what programs would help these businesses grow. And one recommendation that they made is for a program just like this. We also want to make sure that there are ample opportunities for young adults to work in Greater Minnesota and raise a family there. This is because we know that keeping students in Greater Minnesota means a healthy and future, healthy and strong future for our communities. The internship program would provide a small tax credit to a Greater Minnesota business who hires an intern from a Minnesota college, university, or other higher education institution. It would be 40% of the amount that is paid to the student, or $1,250, whichever is less. The program would be administered by the Office of Higher Education, who would work to help process the credits and work with the institutions and the businesses to get them out into the community. The student must be paid and receive academic credit. And finally, the business must certify that they would not have hired the student without the tax credit. You may also be asking why this program is only for Greater Minnesota and not for the entire state. Well, the data shows that there is a workforce gap between the metro area and Greater Minnesota. I provided a handout for the committee, which includes some research that we did analyzing some of the workforce development issues across the state. You'll see that Greater Minnesota's workforce has a larger percentage approaching retirement or past retirement, as well as Greater Minnesota also struggles to hold on to population after the college years. Now, there's actually slightly more people in Greater Minnesota between the ages of 18 to 24, but then that population shifts dramatically in favor of the metro area between the ages of 25 to 64. The largest gap is between the ages of 25 and 34. There are also more people with at least a two-year degree in percentage-wise in the metro area across every age group. This bill is attempting to help balance out those disparities and increase the number of graduates who can look for work and find work in Greater Minnesota. Our members believe that this program is good both for students and for businesses. Internships in general are an excellent way for students to connect with future employers. This program would expand the field of opportunities because there would be more businesses looking to hire interns than there were before. And since the internship is paid, we believe that more students would be able to accept a position that they may not have been able to accept before. We also believe that this is good for business. The program itself would enhance the connection between a business and a student, introducing the business to a potential future employee. This not only builds the relationship between the business and that specific employee, but it also enhances the connection between the student body at the college, creating the potential for future internship opportunities down the road. It also introduces students to businesses in Greater Minnesota, communities that they may not have considered before. And business organizations are supporting this legislation. In your packet has included a letter of support from the Albert Lee Freeburn County Chamber of Commerce with their 450 members, and the Worthington Economic Development Corporation, which represents 65 businesses. In addition, the Laverne, Crookston, and Worthington Chambers of Commerce have also passed formal resolutions in support of this program. We believe that they recognize that this would help create new opportunities in the future. So again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of this bill and on behalf of the program and on behalf of the coalition. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Burton? Seeing none, I do have a couple of other folks who would like to testify. I have, so thank you very much, Mr. Burton. I have Amanda Bardonner from MSUSA. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Senator Fischbach, members. For the record, I'm Amanda Bardonner, State Chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. Obviously here in support of the bill and internships for our students. As you know, six of our seven campuses are in Greater Minnesota, where our population of students are as well. And as Senator Miller had said, this conversation really grew of opportunities with students and discussions at Winona. As you see, there's a letter from Jack Lanahan. He's the student body president at Winona State University, of their support for this. And so obviously we know that internships are important and that there's student support across the state. I had mentioned briefly, I think it was a couple weeks ago, about personal experience that I have in drawing internships and businesses within the classroom, and just wanted to touch on that a little bit and the opportunity that our students have had with that. While working with Schaefer Ventilation out of the St. Cloud area, I was able to develop the entrance strategy for countries in Latin America for them, which has then been used in their business strategy and continued to use now. And it's that experience that myself and my fellow students have been able to use and will use when we're interviewing for jobs in the future. Through the internship programs, another key importance of this is that not only is it benefiting the one student who has the internship and the business who's benefiting, but it's also for students at the university and the partnerships that continue after the internship has stopped. Schaefer Ventilation now is actually continuing offering summer internships, and I'm looking at that opportunity for this summer. So it's something that now not only one student has benefited from, but others will continue to benefit in the future. The proposal also recognizes the changing face of Greater Minnesota, higher education, and the workforce. In the past, like I said, students would need to seek the internships to gain the experience that you needed for your careers, but now you need that experience before you have your internship. And so these partnerships would really allow that opportunity for students. Most students, like we know, are looking in the metro area because it's the larger companies that we know about. I've definitely been accustomed to this myself. We look for the greater companies or the bigger companies because that's who we know, but it's not always the best experience for the students. In fact, in this bill, students receiving the extra credit and the paid wage, so it means that more students are able to qualify regardless of their economic background and their financial situation. As a result of the dramatic increases in tuition and the cost of living, students are forced to work the low-wage jobs instead of those internship opportunities that may give them greater experience for the future. And so the proposal is especially helpful for those low-income and first-generation students. And I just thank you for hearing this today, and I would stand for any questions that you'd have.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the witness? No, but you didn't tell us where you went to school.
St. Cloud State. Go Huskies.
I was waiting for my cue. And we have one more. Mr. Larson would like to testify. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, Dan Larson with the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus today, testifying in support of Senator Miller's bill and in appreciation of him and the co-authors bringing it forward. Attracting and keeping skilled and educated students is in rural areas is important to the continued viability of businesses to Greater Minnesota. So this is an effort that we see that reaches out and meets that goal. So we want to go on record today in support of this bill and just very briefly testify in support of the bill. So thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the witness? Senator Roebling.
And not particularly for the witness, perhaps. Somebody has.
Okay. Anyone in particular or just Senator
Roebling?
No,
I'm just trying to figure out when you put a cap on something like this, how exactly will you keep track of it so that you're not going over the top and expending more money? Because some it says up to 40%, but some people won't use that amount. So you can't really just say it's by like 1,000, and you're assuming they'll all use that amount, or maybe that's what they'd have to do, and then there might be some money left over that would just roll over into another year's budget.
Yeah, Madam Chair,
Senator Miller.
Senator Roebling, you bring up a good point. The Office of Higher Ed, is going to administer this. And I think it'll be something that they'll have to look at. Probably starting out, we'd have to stick to the 1,000 student cap and assume that that they're going to use that full amount or go up to the maximum $1,250 limit. If that's not the case, we can certainly work with the Office of Higher Ed and see if we can tweak that. But ultimately, they're going to administer it, and I'm hesitant to put anything into legislation on how they do that because we have to be somewhat flexible. And you bring up a good point why we have to be flexible.
Madam Chair?
Senator Roebling.
And I think it's pretty clear. So it is just for eligible students, and that means students who have not yet graduated, correct?
Yes, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Miller.
Senator Roebling, students that have not yet graduated, it has to be, and it has to be a paid internship as well. Sure.
And as I took a look, I think it also has to provide academic credit in addition. Is that correct, too?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, yes.
Mr. Burton.
It's designed for students at a four-year college who are in their junior or senior year, or students that are at a two-year college and have half of their credits already completed within a, and the internship would be closely related to the field that they're studying. So the idea is to connect students with the field that they are familiar with, also on the tail end of their college or school year. So it's confined to that area, plus the pay and the credit portions of that. So that's how this, the academic, that's how the whole package gets put together.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
And it is obviously, I did read it, if they had a clinical required, that wasn't eligible. Student teachers wouldn't be eligible, I'm assuming. They have to do student teaching, and that's a requirement. Would that be considered like a clinical? I don't know. That's more for health-related professions, I guess.
Madam Chair and Senator Miller, usually like a student teacher wouldn't be paid. I mean, if they're student teaching and they're in the classroom, at least as far as I know, that's not a paid internship.
Typically not.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, they typically aren't. I just want to make sure that it would stay that way, and so that a private school couldn't, well, except they don't need tax credits. Most of them are nonprofits, so I guess it wouldn't be something that they'd probably be interested in. And it wouldn't really, how would it affect any nonprofit organizations if they wanted to? It would have to be somebody who actually could benefit from a tax credit, I imagine. It isn't something, it's something they have to be able to deduct from the, what taxes they owe, not get a refund for. Is that correct?
Mr. Burton?
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I would have to look at the legislation closely to analyze that portion of it from the refundable side. I believe it is a refundable credit. I don't know how it would work with the nonprofit, but I'd be happy to follow up with you after the hearing.
I believe Senate Counsel has something they could add.
Sure,
Mr. Fuller, or do you not? Was I all wrong?
Madam Chair, I think he said it. It's a refundable credit, and obviously it's not available to a nonprofit that doesn't have credit paying status. That's the thought.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members,
Senator Miller,
it has to be a new internship opportunity. So if there's a company right now in Greater Minnesota that, say, has five internships opportunities, they wouldn't qualify. It has to be for companies that are not currently filling those internships or not that they currently don't have internships offered through their business.
Further discussion on Senate File 1869?
Chair.
Senator Roebling.
And I'm assuming this is true. I'm a Metro legislator. But if I have students who are going to the Minsky campuses in Greater Minnesota, they don't have to be from Greater Minnesota. They're just, the internship has to be in Greater Minnesota. Is that right? So the Metro students could certainly access this.
Yes.
Senator Miller.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, it is businesses in Greater Minnesota, but just for example, if there's a student going to the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, and maybe they're from Greater Minnesota, they can certainly, or they want to, they don't even have to be from Greater Minnesota, they can take advantage of this program. So it's certainly beneficial for students throughout the state of Minnesota. So it doesn't matter where they attend school; it just matters where the business is located.
I will just ask if there's anyone else in the audience who wanted to testify on Senate File 1869. Seeing nobody, further discussion from the committee? Senator Roebling?
Well, Madam Chair, I realize this has a ways to go to some finance committees yet, or tax committee.
Yep.
And it may have a difficult path, I don't know, because it does have a fiscal note attached to it. But, it's an interesting new concept. and I see it as a form of almost financial aid even for students who are fortunate enough to get this, because it could help them get summer paid jobs, or not even during the summer. They could be doing a school year as well, as long as they're 12 hours a week. Is that correct?
Yes.
Senator Miller. Senator Miller, do you have a motion you'd like to make on the bill?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll just add, before we move the bill here, you know, many times legislation is passed and there's unintended consequences and we come back and we have to tweak it a little bit, but there's another piece of this legislation that I think is a positive, intended positive result or positive consequence, and that is many internships actually lead to full-time positions. So this will give, hopefully, students will rethink moving outside of greater Minnesota right away, and hopefully some of these internships will actually lead to full-time positions, and we'll have more of the younger population starting their careers and hopefully starting families in greater Minnesota. So I see that as a positive thing, something that we can't really write into legislation, but hopefully that'll be a result of a program like this. And I'll just add that this program, I believe, is good for students. It's good for colleges and universities. It's good for local businesses, and perhaps most importantly, good for local communities. So with that said, I move Senate File 1869 as amended to pass and move to the Tax Committee.
We referred to Tax Committee. Yes, they requested it. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
On the next on the agenda, we have Senate File 1858, Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson, whenever you're ready, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1858 was an idea brought to me by the Minnesota State University Students Association.
Could you sign on?
I'm going to probably have Amanda come up. But anyway, Amanda, you want to come on up?
We do have Ms. Bardonner on the list, so please, if she'd like.
I'm going to, I'll give a few remarks, and then I'll let her speak. First of all, I just want to say I really appreciate the efforts over the last few years made by the textbook companies, by the student bookstores, by faculty, by the University of Minnesota, Minsky, and all institutes of higher education for attempting to try to keep the textbook costs down. It's been a mounting problem over the course of many years.
Senator Carlson, may I just interrupt for a moment? My understanding is we do have
a
delete all amendment, yep. And that may be easier so that we would have that in front of us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I believe
Chair.
You have, it's a delete all A1, and it would be considered an author's amendment.
Correct. I have an author's amendment. It's the A1 delete everything amendment. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, actually, Senate counsel told me, so. So all in favor of the A1, well, Senator Carlson moves the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Now we have the bill as amended by the A1 amendment in front of us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that.
No problem.
And as I was saying, I appreciate the efforts by all those involved in higher education for attempting to keep textbook costs down. Two things that this bill is going to attempt to do is to get information out to the students in a timely manner so that they can make decisions on what courses they're going to take. Oftentimes, students are in a quandary about what course they want to go, what track they want to go on, and sometimes, and it may be unfortunate, but sometimes they really do rely on what can they afford. And so having this information by the colleges and university out in a timely manner, that'll help them make that decision. Further, also reducing textbook costs, whether it's using the loan programs, using ebooks, whatever, and then establishing a work group to continue to work on keeping these costs down. Since introducing the bill a little over a week ago, I met with many representatives that have involvement in the textbook area, met with textbook folks from the textbook industry, met with folks from University of Minnesota, met with folks from MinSCU, and all of their very, very good ideas were brought into, which brought us to the A1 amendment that we're on. At this point, I guess I would turn it over to Amanda for...
Yeah. Thank Bar you, Donner. Carson.
I can't say it. I can't
talk. That's why I called her Amanda.
That's Donner. Good.
Bar Donner. I can say it if I just take a sec. Welcome again. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Fishbach. Members, maybe I'll just run through some of the things that would be then in the amendment and then move into the testimony afterwards if there's any questions about the actual bill itself first. And so basically, as Senator Carlson said, this really came out of conversations with students about what can we do about the collective rising costs across the system. Obviously, our tuitions continue to increase. What can we do in other areas in a non-budget year? And so this really came up, I think, last spring, particularly in conversation with Representative Banyan in the House side. And so we brought this with students from Bemidji, really to Senator Carlson for support in the Senate side because it's a continuing issue that we see. One of the areas that you'll see is the change from 45 days would be now from the 30 days in the recommended course materials being present. It's really about getting the materials to students in a timely manner, making sure that people are able to get their course material when they're registering. One thing I would say, too, is that we're noticing that each bookstore on campuses have their own timeline as far as when materials are must be turned in from the professors and things. And so really it goes along with their timeline and may actually be later than their timelines. And so each campus still has the right to do as long as they're in conjunction with this. The other part that you'll see as changed in the amendment would be the textbook work group. This is something we're really excited about. The conversations that we can have together collectively with all stakeholders at the MinSCU level about how can we be an industry leader as far as textbooks. So whether that means e-textbooks, textbook rental programs, how can we really work together to bring those costs down? And so that's sort of the development of the work group, as you see in front of you.
Questions, discussion from the committee? I do have one other witness signed up, and that's Don Larson from the IFL.
If I might, just sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I just wasn't sure if I could add some other testimony briefly for you.
Sure.
I just wanted to let the committee know that we have actually implemented a textbook survey that we've sent out to our 75,000 students across the university system. And we have so far received over 800 comments back. It's been out for about a week now. And so we'd be happy to share those with the committee when it's completed and share those results. But I think it's definitely an issue that students and families alike are paying attention to.
That would be wonderful. Thank you. When you get that, when that is available, let us know. And then, Senator Brown, you had a question for this witness? Or
either one of them. Yes, thank
Senator
you, Madam
Brown.
Chair. I'm not clear on why we need legislation. Is the system broken right now? Are things not working effectively? If you could just explain that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ms. Bardonner.
Yep, Madam Chair. I think that there was a lot of conversation in 2008, if you remember, if you were part of those conversations, the Higher Ed Opportunity Act and textbooks federally. Also, there is the state legislation that was enacted in 2008 as well. And what we're seeing is that some of that may not be as strict as it may need to be, or maybe it's not being enforced to the level that it could be. And so I think that's sort of the work group will really allow those conversations to happen of are making sure that not only that publishers are following what they need to be doing, but also that bookstores are giving the information to students or to faculty. It really is about the recent additions. And so our faculty being given the information that they need in order to make decisions if they're buying a current or a previous used edition, that saves a lot of cost for students. And so there are things that aren't refined, and this would help to do that.
Senator Brown.
Madam Chair. So is this something that the universities and schools won't do unless we mandate it to them? Are they not wanting to do it? And if not, why?
Ms. Bardonner.
Madam Chair, I don't think, Senator Brown, that it's something that they're not willing to do it all. I would hate to speak on behalf of them, obviously, but I think that it's conversations that we would welcome across the system of just refining and making sure that we're doing everything that we can to drive down the cost of textbooks for students. I think that there might be some campuses that are doing it better than others, and also the way that our textbook stores are set up is that universities and colleges alike bid for their bookstores, and so it might be a different practice at one university than it is another, and so this really allows the system to have those conversations and make sure everything's in line.
I'm sorry, please, Mr. Mm-hmm. Larson, now please join us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Fischbach and Senator Carlson and committee members, and thank you for your time today. My name is Donald F. Larson. I'm a professor at Minnesota State University, Mankato, but I'm here in my capacity as president of the Interfaculty Organization, which represents the faculty members of the seven state universities in the MinSCU system. I want to, first of all, affirm that the IFO is very much in support of the goals of this legislation. We have been for a very long time. We have a history of working both at the state level and on our campuses with students, the bookstores, administrations, to find ways to hold down the prices of textbooks and other course materials, and to make those processes more transparent. And we've had a certain amount of success in that area already, and we would certainly support further efforts there. I also want to say that I'm very pleased with a number of the changes that we've seen from earlier drafts, and I want to thank Senator Carlson for working with the students and the system office and others in doing that. In particular, I think I can say that the IFO certainly supports the notion of the work group that's called for in Section 4. And I'll come back to that point in a moment. Having said that, I think that following up perhaps on Senator Brown's comments, the language in Sections 2 and 3, even with the changes that clarify a few points that I was confused about, is still premature. This is an area in relation to textbooks that is in continual change. We've seen rapid consolidation in the industry, both in terms of textbook publishers and textbook sales. There are about four major publishers of textbooks now nationwide. There are only about three textbook bookstores for universities nationwide in terms of chains. Two of those are represented at five of our state universities. Morehead and Winona have their own bookstores, but otherwise they're operated either by E. Follett or by Barnes & Noble. In addition to those economic changes, the very nature of the academic enterprise means this is a constantly changing environment as well. While some forms of information, some forms of textbooks require little change from year to year, in other areas the growth is exponential and very difficult to nail down in terms both of the content of what's being conveyed and how it's being conveyed. And that touches then also on the area of the rapid changes in technology at a point where just even a couple of years ago, it was difficult to conceive that one could buy a whole range of texts and put them on a single device that you could carry around in your knapsack or hold in your hand. It's rather like trying to nail down Jell-O, and I think it's difficult to get the kind of degree of specificity that some people might want and to put that into legislation. I do want to say that we do have initiatives, ways in which we have worked with the students, worked with administration. One of those involves changes that I believe Amanda referred to just a little while ago. Just a couple of years ago, you may recall that the legislature provided funding for the MinSCU textbook pilot project. I was involved at Mankato with one aspect of that project and also worked with Todd Bigby, who's here from the Chancellor's office or the system office, on one of those, which was to create a reserve system at the Mankato Library. That involved the cooperation of the MSU campus library, the bookstore, the students, and the administration and the faculty, and it's become quite a successful system where students can now go to the library and check out textbooks for limited periods of time. And the proposed legislation here does not really speak to that kind of initiative and that kind of example. Similarly, we've seen the growth of textbook rentals, rather than having a mandated system, as sometimes been called for in the past, where a campus or bookstore must offer rentals and nothing else to the students. A number of the bookstores, both independently and as part of chains, have offered at least some degree of textbook rentals, and from what I can understand, on our 7 university bookstores, all of them either offer some textbook rentals already or will be offering them this spring. In addition, if any of you chanced to be reading the Mankato Free Press just 2 days ago, there was an article in there referring to the great success of an even more expansive rental system at an independent bookstore that's just on the edge of the campus, so the Maverick Bookstore in Mankato. My point here, then, is that there is a wide-ranging number of ways in which the issues of course materials and textbooks can be approached. It's very difficult to legislate, but on the other hand, I do believe that there are many ways in which that task force or work group that's called for can be very productive. And I'll just end by saying this is in some ways an ideal time to direct this to MNSCU, because the IFO has been working with MNSCU administration, the other bargaining units, and the students over the last year to radically overhaul and reform the committee structures that we have at the state level. Rather than having several dozen committees with sometimes without clear charges, sometimes seeming to work at odds with each other, we now have four councils that are to address academic affairs, student affairs, academic technology, and academic policies. And in an area like textbooks, all four of those areas relate to the textbook issue. So we have systems in place. We don't have to go out and invent a new structure. I think this is a really exciting time to bring this kind of a topic to MNSCU, to the Academic and Student Affairs Division, with a broad range of representation, and to explore those issues. And I'll stand for any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. I believe Senator Miller has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Dr. Larson. Question for you. Winona State University, I think, is one campus in the MNSCU system that's a laptop university, and that's unique to that campus, but I think something that's not unique is college students moving more toward the notebooks or the tablet computers. I just wanted to get your thoughts on, I know Apple Computers come out with some e-books and some online learning stuff with their iPads. So many I's out there, I don't know. The iPods. But I just wanted to get your thought on kind of an evolution moving more toward the electronic textbooks, and do you see that something coming sooner than later?
Thank you, Senator Miller and Chair Fischbach. I agree. This is part of that rapid change I was just speaking about. As you know, through Amazon.com, you can get the Kindle, which is dedicated as a reader of books, and already a number of textbooks can be available through that. The Nook that's provided by Barnes & Noble is another example of that. And there are e-textbooks that can be available online and downloaded either to the laptop or to iPads or various other kinds of devices. It's a very rapidly changing environment, even to the point where devices that were originally designed just for reading, like the Kindle and the Nook, already show signs of being available for other kinds. So when you think of some of the ancillary support materials that are bundled with textbooks, I teach Introduction to Film, and some of the textbook that I use most often, for example, has a website, and it comes with a CD-ROM that includes film clips and other materials. When you can have all of that simply on a device you can hold in your hand, it's going to be a great advantage to the student. Having said that, some of the studies that have come out recently have suggested that students are still not wild about the electronic textbook. They do like having a physical object in their hand that they can highlight, dog ear, maybe rip pages out of, or what have you. But I do think the trend is toward the electronic versions. I'm sure we'll see more of it in the future.
And just to follow up.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that is that something just in general that the faculty is would probably a good idea for this working group. The faculty is open to that and willing to.
I think in general we can say that. Obviously, it's going to differ by individual faculty member for a variety of reasons. But I do think the work group is a great opportunity to explore that very issue, among others.
Very good. Thank you.
Further questions or discussion from the committee?
Okay, thank you again for your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify on Senate File 1858? Senator Carlson, do you have a motion you would like to make?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still a little bit confused.
I believe you want to make the motion.
No, I'm not about that.
Yes.
I'm not sure if the IFO is in favor or not in favor of that bill after all that. I'm a little confused.
Would you like to ask? Well, you know what? You can ask the question. You're on the committee. Senator Carlson.
That was a lot of words, and I don't know whether in favor or not in favor of the bill.
Dr. Larson.
And I guess I'm confused because everyone came to my office to talk about the bill, and I never heard from the IFO. I would have been happy to had a discussion with the IFO and maybe even make further changes in the bill had they come to see me, but I didn't see them, so I'm still confused.
Thank you for raising that, Senator Carlson and Senator Fischbach. I have to confess that I actually was not even aware of the language of the bill until 2 days ago. For whatever reason, and there was some gap in communication somewhere, so I do apologize for that, and we certainly would have liked to have engaged you with that conversation sooner. In terms of the support, I think, again, we certainly support the language in regard to the work group, and on the other hand, I think that the specificity of the language in Sections 2 and 3 is perhaps premature. So it's a mixed message, if you will.
Thank you.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe just a suggestion, if maybe we can try to address some of those issues. Sounds like we're going to lay it over for possible inclusion or.
Well, if that's the motion that Senator Carlson makes, then I
would just ask that
we'll vote on.
If there are concerns with the IFO, let's bring those forward and maybe we can address those concerns.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to work with the IFO if they want to stop by my office. But at this time, I guess what I'd like to do is move Senate File 1858 as amended, be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in a higher ed omnibus policy bill.
Discussion of that motion. All in favor of Senator Carlson's motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion does prevail. You laid over
thank you,
for
Madam
possible
Chair.
Inclusion.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you.
That's it.
Be consistent, don't they?
There is.